Right, we will get started in just a moment. See that our attendees are leveling off here. All right, I think we are ready to go here. So thank you everyone for joining us at the National AI Research Resource Pilot Classroom Partner Showcase. So my name is Alejandro Suarez. I'm here with my colleague Jenny Lee from the Office of Advanced Cyber Infrastructure and our colleague Ellen Zagura, Division Director of the Division of Computer Network Systems, also within the National Science Foundation. And we're going to talk to you a little bit about the NAIR pilot, the active opportunities that are available for researchers. And of course, as the title leads you to, the classroom and education opportunities that are available at NSF and connected to the NAIR pilot, from which you will hear two lightning talks from some education partners specific to the NAIR pilot. So as a reminder, this webinar will be recorded, and a recording of this webinar will be available via the link to which you signed up to the webinar. So as I noted, our agenda will start with an overview of the NAIR pilot. We'll talk a little bit about what it actually consists of, the active opportunities that you can apply to today, and the resources that are available in the research setting and then in the education setting, which will lead to my colleague Ellen talking about the AI education opportunities that are available at NSF, before we will hand it over to our colleagues at the Prototype National Research Platform and Vocarium, who will talk a little bit about their partner-contributed resources that are available via the NAIR pilot for applications. We'll finish off with a Q&A via Zoom, so at any time, you are welcome to submit a question using the Q&A feature in Zoom. We'll try to get to as many of them as we can, as time permits, at the end of our presentations. So what is the National AI Research Resource? Well, the vision for the NAIRR, N-A-I-R-R, is to have a widely accessible national research infrastructure that can advance AI R&D and innovation by empowering a diverse set of users. And this is done by providing access to high-performance computing resources, access to high-quality data sets, catalogs of test beds, education materials, and training opportunities. And those are all to further the goals of spurring innovation and increasing the diversity of talent within the AI space to ensure that the capacity for AI R&D remains competitive on the world stage, and to advance the trustworthiness and robustness of AI models. You can often call this the responsible AI models as well. So this is what the full NAIRR would be looking to accomplish. And the vision for the full NAIRR was discussed in a White House mandated task force report that you can see in purple on the left here. This task force report was released in January of last year, and it had a bold vision for a large-scale, multi-billion dollar AI research resource activity for the nation. Right now, what we are working on is a pilot of that NAIRR infrastructure. So in the White House executive order that was released at the end of October, NSF, with partner agencies that I'll go into in a little bit, were mandated to launch a pilot of the NAIRR, which have specific goals to demonstrate the value and impact of this NAIRR concept to support the transformative AI research that we can among broad communities within existing resources, and to gain experience that can help advance and guide and refine the full NAIRR design. So we should note that the availability of resources that we have right now are those that are contributed in kind from our partners or existing resources that we have available. We do not yet have a fully appropriated NAIRR at this time, so we're seeing what we can do with the pilot. So Even though we're at a pilot stage, researchers and educators can access opportunities today to be able to attain resources to advance their education and research goals. So nearpilot.org is the primary portal to interface with the NEAR pilot and see what opportunities are available. You can see a list of opportunities for researchers as well as classroom and educators. And then there's some other resources that discuss data sets and some external training opportunities and other activities that will be added as the pilot progresses. So in terms of who is eligible for the NEAR pilot, AI researchers, domain scientists that are applying AI within their research, researchers, and students and educators are all eligible to apply for and use the NEAR pilot. There is quite a broad eligibility criteria in terms of affiliation with institutions in terms of who can use pilot resources. The main restriction is that you must be from a US-based institution, but you can be from an academic institution, a nonprofit, federal agency or federally funded R&D center, a state, local, or tribal agency, or a startup or a small business that has some sort of federal funding, such as an SBIR funding. So all of these resources are available to a wide variety of researchers. And this is something that we launched the first availability of resources in January of this year. And we have already announced some of the types of projects that have been supported by NEAR pilot resources as of May 6th. This follows everything from fundamental computer science projects to molecular biology and other disciplinary work in agriculture, ecology, hydrology. So there's a very wide range of activities that are possible via access to the NEAR pilot resources. So I noted that there is a large amount of partners associated with the NEAR pilot. We have a dozen agency partners and over 25 non-governmental partner organizations that are making available different types of resources that researchers and educators can apply to get their research activities or education activities accomplished. So I'm going to go through some examples of the research resources that are available, and then I'm going to hand it over to Ellen, who's going to talk a little bit about the education-focused opportunities at NSF before we go into the education-focused resources that the NEAR pilot provides. So in terms of the access to resources that researchers may find useful within the NEAR pilot, there's a variety of supercomputing or high-performance computing resources that you can apply for access to as part of the NEAR pilot. And this can advance research or education-focused activities. So this smattering of different systems has a variety of different types of architectures and service models, everything from a more traditional batch processing based high-performance computing environment towards a more cloud-based environment, towards more AI-specific chips and architectures and usage modalities, more high memory type systems. All of these types of resources you can apply for and have a justification for why you need that type of resource. In terms of private sector contributions for the researcher space, there's a wide variety of different types of non-government partners that are providing in-kind resource contributions. And we had a webinar on the research related resources on May 21st. You are welcome to look up the recording of that webinar on the link provided here on the QR code that's available on screen. But this wide variety of resources are still available today through an application mechanism that you can find on nearpilot.org. And when it comes to the resource requests, some of you may be familiar with the NSF proposal process for NSF funding. These resources are not requested through the NSF proposal process. It's actually a request for allocation of these types of resources. So it's a much simpler type of proposal. There is an FAQ available on nearpilot.org and some instructions on how to go through the request process. These resources are available first come, first serve, as in once requests have been reviewed and allocated that could limit availability of resources for future requests. But we are looking to make these awards and review awards quite quickly compared to more traditional government funding activities, in that within about 6 weeks of submission, you may be expected to see a response in terms of the status of your request. So it's a simple way to get in, but we recognize that there's a variety of different types of activities that you may want to accomplish related to AI research and education. They may not be they may be a bit more substantive than just requesting allocations. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about a recent Dear Colleague letter that we've come out with, and my colleague Ellen will talk about some of the AI education opportunities that NSF and our computer science directorate has made available. So when it comes to larger scale or demonstration project scale activities that you may wish to take on using NearPilot resources, we have a Dear Colleague letter that was recently released, which asks for early types of research activities or supplemental funding requests to existing NSF projects that are separate from our allocation request process. This is looking for teams of AI researchers or domain scientists, cyber infrastructure specialists that are looking to do something quite unique and innovative with the NearPilot resources that is above and beyond what could be possible with just an allocation request. So this activity, you can read more about by scanning the QR code on the right or going to the link below. These require sending a concept paper, a concept outline to us via the NSF email address that you see at the bottom. But we welcome consideration of such requests if you're looking at something at that scale. When it comes to the education activities, though, I'm sure this is what you're all here and interested to learn about. I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Ellen Zagura, who will talk about some of the AI educator opportunities that NSF has. Take it away, Ellen.
Thanks, Al. Appreciate it. Ellen Zagura. I'm a division director of computer and network systems in SISE, the same part of NSF that that Al and Jenny reside in. I want to put the NAIR pilot classroom opportunities into a little bit of a bigger context about NSF's commitments to education and NSF's recent efforts in the area of AI education. So NSF has longstanding commitments to STEM education at all levels. NSF is a research funding agency, but the education pipeline is an incredibly important part of the research ecosystem. And so NSF has long recognized that supporting STEM education is an important part of the work that we do. In the area of AI, we have stood up an Educate AI initiative. This came into reality at the end of last year. And it has a tall order for its goal. The broad goal is to enable educators to make state-of-the-art inclusive AI educational experiences available nationwide. That is a tall order, especially when you consider that the learners who will need to or are interested in learning about AI are really spread across the entire spectrum, from K-12 to undergraduate, community college and undergraduate experiences, into graduate school, as well as upskilling and reskilling of workers. So it's a big ask. It's a big lift to have state-of-the-art educational experiences in AI made available broadly. The NAIR pilot classroom effort is a key component of Educate AI. As Al has been describing, and you'll hear more about from the two partner presentations, the NAIR pilot classroom is intended to make it possible for more educators to be able to incorporate assignments into their courses that would need AI resources. These may not be available in your own institution. It may be cost prohibitive for you to access them through other means. And so that's a key part of what the NAIR pilot classroom effort is trying to make possible. in the long term, thinking about education, we know that it's a lot more than just access to resources. It's also building communities, communities of practice of educators who are in similar situations in terms of the students they're trying to reach, in terms of the types of courses that they're working to develop, and that if we can foster communities of practice, that will allow everyone to help kind of bootstrap one another up into effective classroom practices where we can take the best of what of what's being learned across the country at different levels. Next slide, Al. So I wanted to mention a couple of the programs, funding programs that NSF has already in place where proposals that relate to AI education would be welcome. So one of these is a program that goes by the IUSQ acronym. This is on improving undergraduate STEM education. And there's a particular portion of it which has to do with computing in undergraduate education. You can read the description. I just want to highlight that this call for proposals asks for re-envisioning how to teach computing effectively to a broad group of students in a scalable manner and with an emphasis on broadening participation. And in particular, there's a mobilizing track within that solicitation to encourage the development of shared national visions around innovation and inclusion, which could very well include AI innovation in undergraduate computing education. So that's one of the programs we have. If you are an educator at the undergraduate level, this program would provide support for rethinking curriculum. Next slide, Al. I'll mention a second program, and these are really, these are samples of what NSF has available that could help support AI education. NSF has a category of funded entity called a Research Coordination Network. And at first glance, you might think that this doesn't have much to do with an education effort, but in fact, despite the R in the name, the goal of the RCN program is to advance a field or create new directions in research or education. So the E is implicit here. A research coordination network can focus on education, and the intent is to support investigators who are looking at a new field or creating new directions so that they can communicate and coordinate their work, including their work on educational activities, and that they can do so across boundaries. So that sounds a lot like the community of practice concept that I mentioned on the previous slide. So each of these two funding programs can complement the NAIR pilot classroom resources to try to help educators both access resources, but also have the time and space to think about the implications for curriculum, and then through RCNs to reach out across other institutions and be able to share best practices. Al?
Thank you so much, Ellen. So you've seen a little bit now about some of the actual NSF funding opportunities that are available. We talked about the NAIR pilot research resources that are available. And for our main event, we'd like to talk a little bit about the education and educator for educator resources that are available. And these will be done from two of our partners, from the San Diego Supercomputing Center, the Prototype National Research Platform, and from our in-kind Vocarium contributor. So right before I go into them, I just need to go through one statement since we have private partners involved. So this is to allow researchers and educators to learn more about the resources that are available via nairpilot.org. And just as a note, NSF does not endorse any specific information in organizations, the views they may express, or the project services they offer. But with that, I'd like to turn it over to my colleagues at the San Diego Supercomputing Center to talk about the Prototype National Research Platform. So Frank,
next slide.
Rita, take it away.
Let's go straight to the next slide. So we're going to talk a little bit about philosophy, and then mostly about what is actually on offer. Next slide. The ultimately, what we're trying to do here is that the NRP is designed to democratize access. And we want to connect every community college, every minority serving institution, and every college and university, including all urban, rural, and tribal institutions, to a world-class and secure research and education infrastructure with particular attention to institutions that have been chronically underserved. And I've called stole this from the minds we need, as you can see here as a reference, but this is really what is underlying of what we do. Next slide. This is the current deployment. It is an infrastructure that is literally deployed all over the country. It has 68 institutions at this point and included. And the NRP is a prototype to do exactly what this Minds We Need was aspiring to. Next slide. And if you are interested in joining this, send me an email that is separate from the one I think we're offering. This is funded by an NSF grant. I'll skip this. Next slide. Now let's get into what is actually on offer within the context of the NEAR classroom. And what I'm going to talk about is one slide on what's on offer, the resources, and then we'll talk about how are other people already using this. And let me move this away so that I can actually see my slide. The starting point is, this is what we're offering is a Jupyter resource for classes. And in addition to a Jupyter resource for classes, as written on the first bullet, let me move to the fourth bullet. We have a support community interaction through Matrix channels. Matrix is an open source version of Slack. I mean, I assume everybody knows what a Slack channel is, and Matrix channels are basically the same as Slack channels. And so in a way, if you listen to or the previous speaker, we are trying to create a community that teaches via Jupyter resources on our platform, and that community can talk to each other, meaning the educators can talk to each other, learn from each other, develop best practices, share best practices, da-da-da-da-da-da. Teach each other about how to get around bugs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And all of that is supported via the Matrix channel. In addition to the Matrix channels, where educators talk to each other, we're also offering one for where the educators talk to the students. There's a ticketing system, and everything else on this page, I think, is probably self-explanatory. So let's go to the next slide. Now, what is required from you? If you want to teach a class on our platform, you need to submit a syllabus of the planned class. We can provide you examples from previous classes that have already been taught, and I'll give you some names in the next slide. We want to get some information about you from you. What exactly do you need for the course? Do you need data? Where's the location? What's the structure? Basically, we want to understand how much technical support you need from us in order to pull this off. We want to get an understanding of the number of students, the dates the classes happen. The latter is only important is especially important if you intend to use our platform inside the classroom. If you use our platform only for assignments, then we don't need the dates of the classes as importantly. And we also want from you to know what exactly is your plan. Are you planning to use us during classroom? Is it only for assignments? Is it for homework? Is it for quizzes? Are they quizzes at a certain time? Basically, if you bring a few hundred students to our platform, we want to understand when in time you actually need interactive support, because when are your 300 students active and want to do something? And we want you to tell us as part of your proposal. Finally, we want to get a little bit of a sense of what kind of resources you need. In particular, if you intend to do something with LLM, what's the LLM, what kind of memory, those kinds of things. If you don't use LLMs, then the requirements are probably less stringent. And we need to know a little bit of what to prepare for so that we can appropriately support you. Next slide. Now I want to go into this. At present, there's about, I want to say, maybe half a dozen institutions that teach anywhere between a couple to a couple dozen classes on the platform right now. And I want to give you two examples. In fact, I'm probably going to just give you one example in the interest of time. California State University San Bernardino. Next slide. CSU San Bernardino is an interesting institution in that it has a fair number of students, 19,000, but 57% of them are Pell Grant recipients. And the institution is a Hispanic-serving institution, so it's not your typical Harvard or MIT, or UCSD for that matter. It is an institution much more representative of the bulk of the 3,900 institutions of higher learning in the US. And currently, they're offering the courses that I've listed here that they've done in the past, and they offer routinely. There's some machine learning, some big data analytics, all the usual stuff that you'd expect. Next slide. And we have syllabi of some of these is available for you. The history of CSU San Bernardino on the platform is they very much started just like you would be starting. They started with a single class in our Jupyter Hub by our Jupyter resources. At that point, they loved it. They then created a copy of our hub, which they now run for their own university. And so the reason why I'm stressing this is because ultimately, while we're all for you teaching a single class, we're really wanting to teach you how to fish rather than provide you food. Ultimately, we're looking long-term as you to engage with the platform, decide whether this is the kind of thing that makes you happy to teach a class, and then your institution to become a partner and therefore scale this out by your institution and your own hub teaching your own dozens of classes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a long-term exit strategy as well as an incoming strategy. Next slide. How much time do you have left?
I think you have about 5 minutes left.
Okay, I have plenty of time. Then let's go through this. Another example is the University of Missouri, which is leveraging the Jupyter Hub on Nautilus for STEM and AIML experiential learning and education. They have, like many of the institutions that work with us currently, they also started small. They started with trying this out. Then they invested in buying their own hardware. We operated for them. And if you want to learn more about how that works, send me an email and we do this separately from this webinar. And at this point, they have they wrote a proposal for a CC Star Award that gave them hardware to add on to. And at this point, they use this infrastructure as it's described here in order to both do experiential learning opportunities as well as teach classroom. Next slide. And the kind of classes include computer science classes, HPC classes, undergraduate data science, HPC emphasis for the graduate data science. And we also from Missouri also gave us an example syllabus that we can share with you. And they're also teaching and courses from the Department of Higher Education Workforce Development. So it's sort of they both use the platform for regular classroom teaching, but also for what I would more call training and workforce development courses that are not on a regular quarter or semi or semester schedule, but on other schedules. Next slide. Summary. Our offering for their classroom offers us Jupyter resources that can back and to use GPU nodes on Nautilus and any other integrated nodes. Basically, if we don't have the GPUs that you want, we'll figure something out. We'll find the GPUs elsewhere. And because the infrastructure is sufficiently flexible that we can go out in the cloud and integrate GPUs from the cloud into our platform. The classes that we're looking for you to teach is AIML or using AIML in domain science. Proposals should include syllabus, etc. All the information I said. An ideal engagement from our side would be, if you want to teach something in the fall, you should actually submit your request now so that we can give you access over the summer. Over the summer, you figure out how to actually do this. And we teach you how to do this. We learn. You get your TAs. The moment that you get your TAs is assigned to you, you can get them onto the platform, figure out how it works so that you're up and running and don't have to have any stress at the beginning of the semester or the quarter in the fall. But we're really angling towards regular classroom teaching fall quarter or fall semester. And there's a vibrant community that you can tap into right away the moment that you get access. And you can ask others, so how have you done this? What worked? What doesn't work? Etc. We monitor that chat room, but we don't necessarily provide always the answers, because the idea is to create a community that self-supports each other and ultimately can grow and is not limited by our pockets and the amount of effort that is available that we can put on this. And I think that's it. Ask any questions you want.
Thank you so much, Frank. Now we will turn it over to Vocarium. And please take it away, David.
Yeah, hi. As Al and Ellen mentioned earlier, there are significant challenges when teaching AI at scale, including supporting a curriculum that incorporates the latest in AI advancements, ensuring access to appropriate cloud and AI resources, supporting diverse skill levels among the different learners, and providing enough hands-on experience. So today we're pleased to share that Vocarium is advancing AI education in partnership with this NAIR pilot classroom initiative. As you may know, Vocarium is a leading hands-on platform in the edtech space. We've reached over 4 million learners and are in use at more than 7,000 colleges and universities worldwide. Some of you may already be using Vocarium through AWS Academy, Udacity Scholarship Programs, Databricks University Alliances, or one of our many other programs and partnerships around the world. So our suite products support hands-on learning for generative AI, cloud computing, machine learning, data science, and more. Next slide. In terms of our contribution, today and for the next 2 years, Vocarium is donating 20,000 seats of our AI notebook in support of NAIR. This donation reflects our commitment to ensuring that AI education is inclusive and accessible, leaving no one behind. What really excites us about NAIR is the potential to train the next generation AI leaders at a massive scale. Next slide. So what is the Vocarium AI Notebook? Well, it's a cloud-based enhanced Jupyter Notebook designed specifically for teaching and learning AI. So it incorporates numerous features tailored towards education, including integration into LMSs. Here you'll see that Vocarium is iframed right into a Canvas instance here. Okay, students can do the work and submit their work for automated assessments through MBGrader. We can set up team projects for learners to work together on different projects, and everything is delivered through the browser. In addition, you can easily add secure and budgeted resources like GPUs for deep learning, Gen AI to help teach prompt engineering, and also using Gen AI API keys to build applications. Okay, and so, you know, for model training, we can seamlessly send jobs directly to GPUs for processing. You control the type of instances, the scaling policies, as well as the budgets for the users and the organizations. For prompt engineering, we also have introduced a prompt cell type, okay, so that learners can quickly interact with different models, okay, as well as using embeddings and RAG to enhance the quality and the relevance of the generated outputs. So it makes it really easy to tie in and in one place integrate all the AI sort of capabilities. These features really ensure that both educators and learners have a robust, scalable, efficient platform for learning and experimenting with AI. And I think to be clear, Vocarium does not provide any instructional content or assignments. We're the platform that helps you deliver those most effectively. In the first batch of NAER classroom allocations, we'll be supporting Iowa State University with their translational AI boot camps. Next slide. So we do provide optional, secure, budgeted, and policy-controlled access to resources which can be provisioned at the institution, learner, or lab levels. Okay, and so this includes cloud infrastructure like AWS, Azure, GCP. It also includes
I need to do
model
some
and
proving
API
on that.
access
Hi.
to OpenAI, Claude, and others. Vocarium's AI notebook is actually the first of its kind that fully integrates managed access to these type of resources. And these can all be configured by an organization administrator as well as instructors. Next slide. I think what further distinguishes the AI notebooks from other platforms like Google Colab or JupyterHub are the classroom features, which really include various assessment approaches, including manual and automated grading, TA or instructor inline feedback in student code, peer reviews so that students can gain access to other student environments, run the environments as well as provide feedback, and then also provide a avenue for multiple choice assessments. Another neat option is leaderboard, which allows instructors to run competitions and score submissions based on various criteria. In terms of how the Vocarium AI notebook can be used, it can be used in a live classroom, could be used online. It could, you know, it could be used in an exam scenario. So it could be a high stakes exam, for example. Next slide. In terms of recommended usage, it is ideal for any university course. Our LTI integration means that there's no need to log into Vocarium directly. Learners are sent straight to their Vocarium AI notebook from the LMS, so it's fully embedded into the experience. Student work is retained for the duration of the course. Okay, and then after students have submitted, then the grades are automatically generated by the autograder, and the student scores are sent automatically to the LMS gradebooks. Okay, so it's you know, kind of a very clean experience for instructors. And of course, instructors can gain access to provide their own, you know, kind of teach a class, give demos, and then also instructors have access to the various learner activities as well. So not just the peers can share access to learner work, but the instructors have, of course, have access such that they can do the manual grading as well as provide feedback. Next slide. Another recommended use would be to run workshops, boot camps, or hackathons using our Vocarium AI notebook. This allows learners to or users to self-register on the Vocarium platform, and we can grant short-lived access to the notebooks and associated resources. Last month, at the NVIDIA's developer conference, AWS hosted a workshop on Vocarium, and which taught folks how to train robots in the cloud with NVIDIA GPUs. Next slide. So to recap, Vocarium is offering 20,000 seats of the Vocarium AI notebook to the NAER community. This includes a starter kit with onboarding support, grading assistance, and customization of the environment. Next slide. And we look forward to your proposals, questions, and any engagement. happy to answer any questions. And then at some point, if you'd like, we can set up a demo and walk through it live. Thank you.
Thank you very much, David. So those are our contributed partner presentations, and we are now going to open it up for Q&A. We just want to highlight once again that a recording of this webinar will be available in the next week or so at the event page from which you signed up to this event. So that is available at the link above or at the QR code to your right. So just keep an eye out for the recording that will be posted there. If you want to learn more about announcements about the Nair pilot, say new resources that are coming online, the webinar that we just held, or other types of announcements and activities, you can subscribe to our mailing list right on the homepage of nairpilot.org. You can scroll down a little bit to the subscribe for updates button that will pre-populate an email that can sign you up for our mailing list. And as a reminder, you can use the Q&A feature on Zoom to submit questions. I know we have a team of colleagues at NSF and from our partner contributors that have already been answering several of your questions. So thank you very much to them. What I'm going to do now is just start going through some of the pending questions that we may be able to answer live as we finish off our presentation today. So let me just go through. Here's a simple one, maybe for our Vocarium colleagues. Can you elaborate on the term 20,000 seats? Is this number of students at a particular time, or how are you defining 20,000?
Yeah, so basically, it's 20,000 current seats on a monthly basis. So if you are teaching a course for 1,000, users in a workshop that will last, 2 weeks, that would, just be those number of seats, right? And the next month you can do it again, right? Hopefully that's clear. So if you're teaching a class that will span, a full semester, 3 months, and you need, 1,000 seats, that would, eat into that allocation for those months.
Thank you, David. Let's see some of the other questions. Here's one for the PNRP. Are there any training resources or tutorials available at UCSD, or I guess more generally?
Maida, do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, so we have tutorials on the PNRP documentation page that have like a lot of the basic things that you need for interacting with that with the cluster. We also do lots of workshops. There's one coming up at PERC that we're going to do on using the machine. So yeah, we do have resources. For classes per se, there might be some more specific things needed. Like for example, if you want to spin up your own, if you want to spin up your own instance of Jupyter, we would help you through the metrics channel. So the metrics channel, Frank mentioned for Jupyter Hub admins, is essentially a mechanism to get people started. Like, so if a new faculty member or user wants to get started with that, they can just go in the channel and see what's already being done. We actually have a GitLab instance with all the setup for a default option. But I think there was a question about, changing images and having different kinds of environments. All of those that is possible, and we can help you through the channel.
Thank you very much. Oh, I see we're also joined by our office director of the Office of Advanced Cyber Infrastructure, Katie Antipas. Katie, you have some comments for us? Welcome.
Yeah, I just noticed that there are many questions about the demonstration projects, and I see Marlon kind of repeating the same response in there. I think it's worth noting just again that when you send in a three-page application for NAIR pilot resources, you're requesting those resources. There isn't an exchange of funding. We do have this demonstration project opportunity as well, okay? And that is a request for funding for demonstration projects of the NAIR, for the NAIR. Now, if your thought is that you only need the resources, computing or data resources, then that is not a good match for a demonstration project. A demonstration project, as Al said, is a combination of infrastructure with a domain science. And you should send a concept outline to us, as Al said, at NAIR_pilot@nsf.gov. And so there's two opportunities going on here. And the primary one is to provide the research and education community access to resources.
Thank you, Katie, for that clarification. Yes, we talked about, sort of as an aside, some other NSF-specific, NSF funding activities that are available. And the DCL is one that is a bridge between the NSF-funded activities and NAIR pilot connections. But as Katie said, that is separate from these education requests and separate from allocation requests. It's much more substantive. So let's see if we have any other questions. Yes, what are the questions that are still pending? Also, I see a questioner asked, are there abilities to adjust extensions, kernels, or language servers that are provided in these Jupyter instances? And I would maybe more generally say that to either of the notebook instances of the two different providers that we discussed. So I don't know if our UCSD colleagues and then our Vocarium colleagues could talk to that one.
So everything on the Nautilus side is essentially containerized in terms of what image you use for the Jupyter notebook. So on the back end, you could pretty much choose whatever you want that has the tools that you need and add Jupyter to that and deploy it. And that's the sort of thing we would help you with if you're trying to deploy something different. Just about the only constraint I can think of is the drivers on the node, on the GPU node, just making sure whatever you install is compatible with the underlying hardware drivers and everything. That's about it.
Yeah, with Vocarium, it's similar. You can customize to containers for whatever needs you have.
Thank you, David. Oh, I see we have, Katie's typing this one, but I think it may be important to highlight as well in the main session. There was a questioner that asked that on the NAIR pilot web pages, there are some resources from NSF CloudBank and Jetstream 2 and other nationally available resources like our supercomputing resources. What would be the difference between applying to NAIR versus those programs? So just as a note, NSF does and has historically supported allocation programs for time on supercomputers. The current version of that, one of the main current versions of that, is the Access program. And that is for researchers in any kind of computationally positioned science to request some time on a supercomputer that may be most relevant to the type of science they are doing. So those are still available and still serving researchers. The NAIR pilot is providing over and above resources, so additional allocations on those existing systems and availability of new systems that are specific to AI research and domain-specific research that applies AI needs, as well as training activities that can inform and foster the next generation of AI researchers that we are discussing today. So I hope that differentiates that, yes, there are some activities or some resources that are available through both, and you are free to request resources through the other means by which they are available as well, if that's more relevant to you. But the NAIR is yet another opportunity that allows more institutions to be able to request such resources and a different type of resource, different types of resources to be available in addition to some of these more traditional computing resources that we have.
Can I ask, Alejandro, can I
yes.
Maybe add something clarifying?
Please go ahead, Frank.
About the access versus, my understanding is that some of the contributions to the NAIR pilot can only be received via the NAIR pilot. For example, the AWS and the Microsoft Azure contributions to the NAIR pilot, while they are administered by CloudBank, they cannot be gotten directly from CloudBank. Is that by the CloudBank program? Is that true?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Frank, for that clarification. So some of the nationally available resources, like the NSF CloudBank program, they have specific restrictions on who is eligible to apply. So the eligibility criteria to apply for, say, cloud computing resources through CloudBank are different. And hence, someone who may not be eligible via the CloudBank route to apply for, you brought up AWS resources, they would be eligible possibly to apply for those resources through the NAIR pilot and through the criteria that we have through the NAIR pilot. So that's another differentiator between these types of availability of resources that we have. So thank you, Frank.
There are some questions about how to apply for the resources. Can you send out a link? I type in the chat.
Yes. So yeah. There is, if you look in the NAIR pilot webpage, a link was just provided within our chat. You can go into there's a little drop down menu at the top, or you can scroll down and see the current opportunities. So the classroom and educator resources, if you click apply, that is where you find information about the two resources that were described today, and some application instructions, as well as a pointer to the submission system to be able to put in your application for these resources. So let's see other questions that have been available. Here's an interesting question in terms of the types of coursework that could use some of these resources, and maybe our colleagues at PNRP and Vocarium can respond to this. Would certificate programs and professional training courses offered by universities be eligible for such resources? So I will just point out, in terms of the eligibility criteria, if you're a US-based researcher at a US-based institution, so if you're from a US-based institution, that's the main criteria. So if it's for a course offered by your institution, that would not negate your eligibility for applying to the NAIR pilot and applying to these education resources. But I'll let my colleagues from our partners talk about what that fit might look like if you're running a certificate program or professional training course.
I see. If the NSF is happy, we're happy.
And just one last clarification when it comes to when it says professional training courses. We discussed the eligibility of US-based institutions, and those can be research institutions, institutions of higher education. When it comes to any for-profit businesses, we talk about how small businesses may be eligible, provided they have some sort of federal funding, for example, an SBIR award.
Yeah, and for Vocarium, I think any educational institutions who may want to run these programs, that should be okay. But for profit, that's not really the intended purpose here.
Thank you, David. Katie, yes.
Yeah, Al, maybe I should just add, and I know you covered it at the beginning, is that this really is just the start. We intend to bring online more education resources as we move forward. So please stay tuned and over the next months and into the fall.
Yes, thank you, Katie. So we should note that these resources, the resources that you heard about today only started coming online about a month ago. And there are, more resources that will come online. We'll see more of the outcomes of the initial allocations on these resources. You'll be able to learn about, some examples of what can be done with these resources in addition to what was already discussed at the presentations today. So there's a lot more functionality we'll be building up along the NAIR pilot, and we welcome your participation in letting us know sort of what you think about the availability of these resources, how easy they are to find, how easy they are to use. This will all help inform the evolution of the NAIR pilot as we move forward over the coming months.
We have several questions about the future of NAIR. Maybe Kathy can answer that.
Sure, if you read it out, there's
all okay. This pilot has an end date. And what's the vision of the pilot versus the vision of the changing stuff?
Yeah, so the NAIR pilot, As Al mentioned, NSF was directed to launch the NAIR pilot with our many agency partners as a response to the AI executive order. And so what we were directed to do was really launch the pilot with our existing resources to demonstrate the potential, the impact, the value of the larger NAIR concept. The full NAIR itself is, as described in the NAIR Task Force report, is a $2.6 billion initiative envisioned over a period of 6 years that would require additional funding to achieve. And so what we are, trying to do now is show the value of this concept to the community, really include the community in every step of the way to get, your feedback on what is most useful as we, hopefully we'll be able to go forward and build out a larger NAIR.
Thank you, Katie.
Thank you.
So I'm seeing an earlier question.
Should we go back?
Has there been discussion about how sharing educational items and elements so that they're openly accessible? Those inside and outside those prospective communities of practice through infrastructure like OSF or other repositories. So that's a great question. And we should note that when it comes to accessing the research resources available via the NAIR pilot, any research that is done on use of those with use of those resources should be published openly. So in terms of internal research, we don't allow anything that isn't sort of published in some sort of community venue or journal and is available. The outcomes are available. So this feedback is very useful when it comes to the sharing of educational items and how this evolves the other activities that we funded NSF and with other agencies on the curriculum development itself. We should note that the availability of the resources that you heard about today is specifically the infrastructure to support the curriculum or education and training opportunities that you may have existing or that you are developing independently through your institutions. but we're definitely hearing this interest in more openly available training opportunities, coursework, and other related work there. Jen, did you have some additional feedback?
Yes, if you have any requests for any kind of educational items, elements, you can send it to us, right? And we can work from there. Any request can send to us. Okay, so that's the first question.
Thank you, Jen.
Okay, the other one is about the IP, right? I think you answered that, right?
Yes, I think there was a similar question on the IP and how do you make some of this more available? And we do understand having more training materials available to more student communities is definitely something that we're hearing.
Another question is probably for Dan. Does any access to this chat, the question and answers? Can they get to the question and answers besides the video?
Oh, yes. I see that question as well. Right. Yes, thank you for that feedback. We'll look into how we can make the chat transcript available. If we can make that available, it will be available in the same way that we make the recording available, which will be via that event link that you see in the QR code on screen. So thanks for that feedback.
Thank you. Next one. Next one is NVIDIA's teaching kit.
Yes, I'm not sure. There was a questioner that asked about whether the NVIDIA DLI teaching kit curriculum.
Right. Yeah, this is the question.
Useful. I think that, well, that may be, I don't know if our colleagues at Vocarium or PNRP are familiar with DLI teaching, the NVIDIA DLI teaching kit, but that may be sort of a question related to what types of backends are compatible with either Vocarium or PNRP. But if others have comments on that, you may know more than me on that subject.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't have any information about that.
Yeah, I'll have to check on what's in it before.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
NVIDIA does provide the resources. NVIDIA is one of the resource provider.
Oh, okay.
Right, yeah. And this teaching one is it's free. Yes, Daniel?
Oh, I just have a separate question we can address if we're moving on to the question. So around 301, it looks like we have a question regarding just the general review process for submissions. Al, if you wanted to cover just sort of the general application process and review process.
Yes. So you'll see some documentation on the NER pilot website. The NER classroom requests follow a very similar process to what is done for the research applications. So essentially, you'll fill out an application. It will be reviewed in terms of alignment with the NER pilot goals and sort of what education activities you're doing, the justification of the resources you're looking for. And you got some further feedback about what the different types of resources that are available are looking for in when providing those resources. After that alignment review by outside experts, it will be those proposals will be shared with the providers, and there will be a matching step in which if you requested a specific resource, that resource will be able to say, all right, we have room to be able to accommodate this, or maybe we have some questions we need to ask of the proposer, or there may be some other outcomes that may need to be considered. And this is all hopefully done within the course of just a few weeks. So within the 15th of each month, we will see what has been submitted to that point, and we will start reviewing them for that alignment and the matching to the appropriate resource. This is done sort of in parallel with the education as well as the research resources. And so right now we just had the one set of requests that came in May 15th. We're going through and finishing up the review process for those. And we will start the process right at the same time with proposals that are submitted by June 15th. So we're all hoping to do that relatively quickly. And if you have questions, you can see what the FAQ at the nearpilot.org website has. That's just available in the dropdown from the About page. And you can, if you have any questions, there's also a little help button and some ticketing systems within our application process that can help you get the help you need.
There's another question on Vocalium at 245. Does it, which type of systems?
This was asking how translatable is the Vocalium tools to in-field systems and which types of systems? I don't know if we need more information from our questioner on that one.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what they were getting at. Ideally, okay. We can get a little more information on that.
To that questioner, feel free to, if you want to define what in-field systems are a little bit more, we can try to get you an answer on that. We had a question that asked, could you talk about educator resources that might be applicable for K-12 educators? That's a great question. As you may have seen from the presentations today, a lot of the resources that we have available are geared primarily towards undergraduate or maybe even graduate student settings. However, there are other opportunities that are available, especially for broadening participation in computing, NSF programs that are on that line. Jen, you may have more that you can say on that.
Yes, for Educate AI, they have the CS for All, and those it's connected to K-12. Right. And I think Frank also mentioned that they have some K-12 usage.
Yeah,
right?
Yes. We're working with CNIC, the regional networking organization in California. And CNIC has as its target audience K-12, public libraries, the whole range. And so they want to use our platform also for K-12 education and offer it. But we haven't done it yet. So I can't give you an example that I could actually say, here's a teacher who's used this in grade 11 to teach blah. But fundamentally, we're not excluding it. So if somebody were to put in a near classroom request for teaching something that requires that makes useful use of the PNRP in a K-12 context, we will certainly review it and consider it, and there's no reason why not.
Thank you, Frank. I see. Dan, can you bring up, Marlon, can you highlight which question you were asking about the US-based researcher requirement? And just make sure we answer the right one.
Yeah, tell us the time. I don't see. What time?
It's making reference to some documentation on one of the NAIR pages that indicates that the courses themselves have to be strictly accessible for individuals affiliated with US institutions.
Yes. So in terms of this comes back to the usage of the research and education resources. So in either of those settings, the users, and so this would be the students that may be using the resource for a given class need to be part of a US-based institution. So that has nothing to do with citizenship of the students or background of the students or their immigration status of the students. All it has to do is what is the institutional affiliation of the student. So a student that is affiliated with a US-based university, for example, that is where they're taking the course, that is an appropriate usage case for the NAIR pilot. A student that is affiliated with an international university based outside of the US and using the resource for a course outside of the US would not be eligible for NAIR pilot resources to that end. I hope that clarifies the US-based user requirements of the NAIR pilot.
We have several questions about education material. I think we answered that. It's that if we don't have anything right now that you're looking for, please let us know. You can send us email, contact us. Thank you.
Yes, and we will put some of our emails in the chat as well. If you have questions about any of the things that were discussed here, you may have seen, well, let me just type in my email here. So you can reach me via my email, alsuarez@nsf.gov. You may have received that email when you registered for the presentations today, and I'd be happy to forward that along to whoever can answer your question best. Otherwise, you can reach out to folks at Vocarium or UCSD or other colleagues at NSF directly. And if you have more general questions about the NAIR pilot or other ways you wish to get involved, my colleague Katie just put in NAIR_pilot@nsf.gov is our general email address for all inquiries related to the pilot. Another question, Dan?
Yes, at 2:57, there's a question that appears to be asking about funding for the NAIR pilot, which I am interpreting as for rather than from. So it may be asking about the broader sort of funding landscape for the NAIR pilot.
Yes, Katie, I think you may be able to talk to this.
Yeah, so... for the NAIR pilot itself, I think you have to stay tuned to hear more about what may be available in an FY24 budget. NSF's FY25 President's Request budget is $30 million for the pilot. That, you know, that obviously is public information. And then for the full NAIR, I mean, there's draft legislation in a Create AI Act, but that, you know, probably has a ways to go. So that's, I think, what we can say at this point.
Thank you, Katie. There was a question. I'll just note some of these you can also see in the frequently asked questions page of the NAIRpilot.org site. But this may be worth bringing up here is someone had asked that do the NAIR requests cover both the NSF-funded infrastructure and industry resources? And if so, what is the maximum allowable request size? So anything that is listed on NAIRpilot.org is eligible to be requested through that opportunity, directly through the application process there. So that includes a mixture of activities funded by NSF as well as other agencies and the non-government contributors. When it comes to any, I'm sorry, I think I lost the question here. When it comes to any other maximums in terms of how much you can request, there's no specific limitation right now on how large of a request you can make. Especially some of our non-government providers like Vocarium have noted what is the total amount of resources that they've been able to make available. So, I think that's something to keep in mind when you're requesting a resource is you're not likely to be able to get a request for the entirety of the resource that's available. It would have to be some fraction of that. I can let my colleagues at PNRP or Vocarium talk about some of the scale that you've worked in the past or what may make sense when you're looking at proposals or requests within the NAIR pilot structure.
Yeah, for Vocarium, we are very scalable. So we are able to accommodate most requests. You know, we do run synchronous, you know, large scale events. Actually, this week we're at the Databricks and AI Summit, and they've been running workshops all week on our platform with thousands of learners. So we can, you know, bring in lots of synchronous learners. It could be, you know, small classrooms as well. And of course, asynchronous is pretty straightforward.
Anything from our PNRP colleagues in terms of maximum size requests that, or what you see is the scalability of how much of the resource you can make available for a given request?
I think, let me give you, it is clearly not as scalable as the our commercial friends here. I think a reasonable assumption that we are making right now is that we will run out of human effort before we run out of computing infrastructure. What we're assuming we can set aside is an infrastructure equivalent to what USSD uses to do its own teaching. And USSD teaches 50 courses simultaneously across 5,000 students. I think if you came to us and said you want a 1,000 student course that you're teaching, we probably would reject it, because that doesn't make sense. If it is a few hundred, it's probably doable. And where exactly the line is unclear. Does that help?
Thank you, Frank. I think
I also want to jump in and say that's actually one of the reasons we were asking about the sizes of the resources and all for the particular class, because it could also depend on what your particular class needs, right? You could have a case where you scale up a lot and need a lot of resources.
So yeah, obviously you're not going to be able to use PNRP to teach a class on how to train ChatGPT. That's obvious. None of us can offer that, obviously. And so there are obviously limits. And where exactly those are, we'll have to sort out. This is why it's called a pilot.
Okay, so why we're here, what about minimum? Any minimum for the students in the class? That's just one question just came up.
I see no reason why there should be any minimum.
There's no minimum here either.
Okay, thank you. And another question also for, I think you mentioned 25 regional chapters. How come the valley is not included? I think that's for Frank, probably. The last one, yes, 318. 318.
I don't understand the question.
So someone had asked, is NAIR open to collaborating with nonprofits, universities, have their own funding programs that they want to leverage to support NAIR development, in particular help with development and distribution of materials? For that questioner, feel free to reach out at nair_pilot@nsf.gov, especially if there are activities, you know, if there's contributions you wish to make, or if an allocation on some of our resources can help some of your development activities. If there's some unique way that you'd be interested in partnering with the NAIR, we're happy to hear it. I think we're running out of time. I think at this point, let me just go through our slides one more time, because there were a few questions. Regarding, I think it's the, so there, some questions about contacting PNRP. I think that can be done through reaching out to me or through the NAIR pilot inbox. If you have any further questions on that, we'll be sure to route you to the right person. But I think that may be about time for us. So I think what I want to do is, first off, I want to give a great thank you to our partners at PNRP and Vocarium to be able to tell us a little bit more about our activities. I'd also like to thank my colleagues, Ellen Zagura and Jenny Lee, who talked about the education opportunities that NSF has available, as well as Katie Antipas, our office director, who has helped out with our Q&A. We have some other colleagues within NSF, Marlon Pierce, and our science technology policy fellow, Daniel Bullock, who has also been tirelessly answering a lot of the questions in the background that you've been asking. So thank you all so much for coming. We hope to have more of these webinars on different NAIR pilot resources, opportunities, new activities that relate to the pilot in the coming weeks and months. So please look forward to future announcements via our mailing list. And we look forward to hearing from you all and the great types of applications you may put in and how you'd be able to use these resources. So thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.